This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Do you love music? Then you need to visit Shearer's Music Works.
From aspiring guitarist to touring pianist, Shearer's caters to musicians of all chords. In store, you'll find an amazing range of instruments and print music, and if your instrument needs a tune-up, they have on-site repair and servicing. Shearer's Music Works on Anglesey Street, Hamilton. Your total music store.
Proud sponsor of the Back Porch Bluegrass Show on Free FM.
Welcome to another edition of Back Porch Bluegrass. I'm your host, Paul Trendworth, and do I have a great show lined up for you. I've got a guest in the studio with me, young Dan Cosgrove, who is a local musician and recording engineer and record producer. Hello, Dan.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, very good, thanks. It's going to be great fun talking to you about your recording processes and things like that, and just analysing a bit of the bluegrass music that I'm going to play. That was me and Colleen and friends playing about 1987 or something like that. That was a tune, and I bet you were listening to the mix and thought, well, he could have had that a bit higher and could have had that lower.
No, it was killer. It was awesome. Loved it.
Now, here's one that you might like. This guy reminds you of you. You might have heard his name, Dan Tominski.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was the man who actually did the Man of Constant Sorrow and the Oh Brother, Where Art Thou. He was George Clooney's voice, he's a great musician, plays with Alison Krauss, or did do, and as you can imagine, has a great band. And here he is, title track of an album that he did many years ago called Wheels, and I think you might enjoy this.
Where I'm bound, nobody knows. Ain't got nothing but my clothes. Best if I forget the way I'm riding. Heading down a one-way track. Wind is cold upon my back. Rumbling of this old steel rail don't die. Win, always ended up again. Change of scenery just might help this time. Watch a daylight turn to black. Long since smoked up my last pack. Dreamed of one day getting off this line. Myself, I don't know.
They're good, aren't they?
That was awesome.
they just play so well and so hard. We managed to see him live in 2008 at a bluegrass festival, and I know Tim was over there with me with the bluegrass band and Alan and David, and we watched them and thought, can there be a better set of bluegrass music? You know, we couldn't even imagine anyone doing a set that was better than what Dan Tominski did. Then Blue Highway came along and just totally blew us away.
Yeah. You know?
And these guys just play so well. I suppose we've been doing that too, but it was just lovely to see those people. Anyway, so what I'm doing is just feeding you some ideas, and then we'll start talking to you about your projects.
Sure.
This is a brand new album from a singer who I really like, Claire Lynch, and brand new in terms that it's just arrived at my place in about 2 weeks ago, and it's 2026, and I'm going to play the title track. It's called Empty Pair of Shoes, something a bit different. Woman singer, which you do a bit of recording. She plays guitar usually and does the lead vocals. We've got Jason Fowler on acoustic guitar, Mark Schatz on bass, and Don Rook on a Kona, whatever a Kona is. I have no idea what that
is. We'll try to pick it out.
We might be able to find out from this. Here's Claire Lynch from her brand new album, Empty Pair of Shoes, with the title track.
The circle of love that goes around. gift of every songbird sung, scent of every rose's bloom, phases of the moon. All of these are finely tuned, except when moments come too soon. So grab a hand and promenade. You step out to the briar picker brown. You may hear me tapping at the next go
sort of whether you call it bluegrass or not, I don't know. It seems to me that acoustic guitars must be the hardest thing in the world to record trying to decide on what sort of sound you like. Anyway,
yeah.
I'll introduce you again. Dan Cosgrove is a local musician in Hamilton. He's a music teacher in Hamilton. He's been playing in bands and country bands and miscellaneous covers bands and all sorts of bands for most of his life. What are you now? How old are you now?
I'm 35.
35?
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I've probably known you for 20 years or more.
Yeah.
And yesterday I was called in to play some banjo on a track that Dan was recording. And while I was doing it, I thought he'd be a great person to interview for the radio show. And he consented to come in. So the next day we're in the studio and asking about his recording career. Okay, Dan, what inspired you to start recording?
Well, I've always had this interest in recording. I've been a performer for my whole life, and I've always dabbled bits and pieces in high school. I did some recording, things at home, just low-tech things. I studied audio production at uni, but I never really did anything professional at home with it until the COVID lockdowns, way it actually started is our band did these little recordings from home where everyone would record their parts and they'd send it to me and I would put it all together into a song. And we did these videos that got really good reception. And that's kind of where the studio started. And I think someone messaged me and said, "Hey, that's awesome. Can you do my album?" Like that.
Wow.
And that's how I started.
Wow, what a great way to do it. I'm always amazed at when I go into a studio, even a home studio lot like yours, as to how much gear you've got. Mm. You know, there's racks of things sitting there with flashing lights and, you know, multiple microphone stands and various forms of, dynamic and condenser microphones and things like that. Did you just go out and buy it all? Or?
So when I got the call for that first album, I thought I'd better get some gear. So I went out and got the basics. I got a better computer that could handle it, and I got one okay-ish vocal mic.
Yes.
Started really basic and an interface.
Yes.
And then as I recorded more and as I felt like I got better, I slowly would buy one piece of gear to sort of try to get everything up to the level.
Yes.
So when I'd buy a better piece of gear, I'd think, oh, I'll get something else that matches that.
Yes.
And that hasn't ended yet. So it's ongoing.
It doesn't end.
No, it's ongoing.
Think.
Yeah.
I remember a recording friend of mine, John Raphael, with whom we did many of our early recordings, and he had a great ear for it. And I've never seen him so excited. He got this new reverb unit that cost a fortune.
Yeah.
And he said, this is the best thing I've ever had. And I thought, you excited about a reverb unit? You know? it doesn't end.
Yeah.
What sort of program do you use? I know there's a whole bunch of different programs that you use. Did you have to hunt to find one, or did you just buy one and learn it?
Yeah, so I use Pro Tools, which is one of the industry standards, I guess you'd call it. There's a few of them. That's what I learned in uni. So it was the one I was most familiar with. And I'd used free versions over the years that kind of have limitations.
Yes.
And then so when I started doing it professionally, then I went ahead and bought the professional version. That,
right.
You know, you get a lot more tracks, you get a lot more little features and things. So Pro Tools is what I know, so that's what I went with. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think you know the program now, or do you keep finding new stuff?
Keep finding new stuff. I know it pretty well now, but there's still every few months I find something new, or someone tells me a new trick. It's quite a in-depth program. There's a lot to it, and a lot of little shortcuts that you don't realise that you can do that make things a little bit more efficient.
Yeah. Right, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess the aim is to capture the studio thing. I know when I go into a studio and we were recording, my intention was always to capture the way that we sounded.
Mm-hmm.
And I've sort of grown in more recent years to think, well, that's not entirely true. You know, it's take what you sound like and make it sound better or whatever, you know. So it gets complicated from there on. And
It starts at the source. That's still the most important thing, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
If the source is good, that's the most important thing.
Yeah. Do you do albums like that first one you said that really got you going, mostly that, or what's the question? Why are you what do you record?
So, yeah, I'm doing another album at the moment as well, but it's usually singles. Clients will come to me, so I specialise in, I guess you'd say, country solo artists.
Yes.
Not so much country bands.
Right.
Because my studio setup is really set up for a solo artist.
Yep.
So a solo artist will come to me with a song idea, and so it's usually just acoustic. I've written a song, and I sort of build it up from there.
Yes.
So it's usually singles at this stage, but there's a couple of EPs and albums.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, but it usually starts right at the sort of songwriting level. And
are you the executive producer and the arranger and the musical director on most of those?
It depends on the client. Some artists have it pretty well sorted out already, and the song is pretty much built, and it's just a case of recording on top.
Yeah.
Some people have a really basic version of a song, and they want, so I give them a bit of help structuring it and fixing up little bits. But yeah, I guess producer and recording, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Mm. One thing that's always interested me is in recording is how do you sort of capture raw talent without being critical and aiming for perfection? Because, you know, I mean, the guy that thought Bob Dylan was brilliant is an amazing person, because probably 80% of the world would have thought, oh, that guy sounds terrible.
Mm.
You know, let's not record him. And I think of some of the world famous artists. I mean, I wouldn't have recorded Johnny Cash, but he's that just shows I know nothing, you know.
Yeah.
And Bob Dylan was there, you know, yeah. and presented it. At what point do you think I can do something with this voice, or I can capture that, or that's yeah. special? Or they're hard decisions, I reckon.
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, it is hard. It is hard. You can usually hear. I like to think I can. You can hear it right off the bat with an artist.
Yes.
If they have that something special.
Yeah.
And you want to preserve that as well. You don't want to. You don't want to cover it up with all this fancy stuff sometimes, especially when you've got that a voice that's so unique. You really want yeah. to just keep it. So there's a fine line, I think, of putting things around it that sound awesome, but while still preserving that uniqueness.
Yeah, it is. Mm. Okay, so if I came to you and said I want to record two tracks that I've written, and I want these my family to be able to have a copy of these musics, and I'll play guitar and sing it, but I want it to sound like a country song or something like that. Mm. What would you do?
I'd get them in and would start with scratch tracks and getting them just to, you know, guitar and vocals sort of thing, play along to a click. I usually work with a click and a metronome and start from there, and then we'd talk about what instrumentation we want. And usually the next step, once that vocal and acoustic or piano is down, is recording the drums.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually work with a partner studio called The Wardrobe in Huntley.
Oh.
And they have a great drum tracking setup, because my little studio is a bit small for a drum setup.
Yes.
So the next step is we take the client up to the studio and we record drums.
Okay.
There's an engineer up there called Casey Messant, and he sort of engineers the session, sits yes. at the desk and does all that, and I get to sit on a chair and just produce, which is amazing. So yes. I can just listen and say, hey, we should try this, yeah. that's awesome.
Yes.
And I get a drummer up called Joshua Blakey. He's okay. from Christchurch, and he's okay. a great drummer. So, yeah, drums is usually that step. And then from there, it's back to my studio, and it's sort of building up other things like
yes.
electric guitars, bass, percussion.
Mm.
And then off to specialist people like yourself, Paul, and
If you need some banjo, you might get me. For sure. Yeah, and Tim played double bass on the track. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, that was my first time actually recording double bass.
They're pretty hard to record, I would imagine.
I tried some different things. Yeah, it was fun. I loved it.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Look, I'm going to. I better put in a word for our sponsors, and then I'll play you another couple of tracks.
Sure.
You're listening to Free FM 89.0, independent community media, and my name's Paul Trendworth. I'm the host, and I'm interviewing Dan Cosgrove about his recording studio. This show, did I say, comes to you from Free FM 89.0 in Hamilton, New Zealand. That's where we are. And our sponsors are Shearer's Music Works, and they're the people that provide anything you need to play music, and for strings, picks, plectrums, thumb picks, capos, guitar straps, stands for your guitar, up to a new Martin guitar. You can get them at Shearer's Music Works, and I'm very pleased that they are sponsoring Back Porch Bluegrass. We do all sorts of things, and they don't tell me what I have to talk about, and I don't tell them what to sell in their shop. That's all right. Look, I'm going to play a bit more bluegrass for you, Dan, and the next track is coming from one of my favourite bands. It's called the Bluegrass Album Band, which is a strange name, but it was a bit of a put-together band with Tony Rice. Had a recording contract that he needed to fill, so he got mates around with whom he'd played before, and they recorded some of the old standards of bluegrass music, mm-hmm. right? You know, that people learned their bluegrass music from listening to the Stanley Brothers or Flatten Scruggs or Bill Monroe or Jimmy Martin or someone like that. And these guys, this was in the mid-80s, they were the ones who learned from the masters, you know, and they put together these tracks. Well, they were so successful, they did 6 or 7 albums.
Wow.
And they just about the Bible of how to play bluegrass music, you know. And there's a classic track from Flatten Scruggs, originally Your Love Is Like a Flower. And this, they just did it right as far as I'm concerned. And we're going to hear them play now. Let's listen to the Bluegrass Album Band.
they tell me that's the way of your love. Remember the night, little darling, we were talking of days gone by, when you told me you always loved me, that for me your love would never die. Oh, they tell me your love's like a flower in the springtime, blossoms so fair. In the fall when it withers away, dear, and they tell me that's the way of your love.
Just about my all-time favourite track, really.
So one. Nice. Loved it.
It's
yeah.
got all the ingredients. Yeah. Eh? Yeah. Love that mandolin rhythm.
Yeah. Loved it. That chopping. Yeah.
That's a snare drum, you know.
Yeah.
That's the easiest way to describe it.
Yeah.
Much of bluegrass music is structured depending on who's doing what. Now, you've got your standard lineup of banjo, mandolin, fiddle, dobro, guitar, bass. Yeah. Say that, that's the usual ones. But it depends on who the singers are. Because if your lead singer is a guitarist, which it most often is, you can get backup for the verses from the other instruments like mandolin or fiddle or banjo will do the backup, you know. If the lead singer is the bass player, the guitarist might do some backup in the verse. When it's the chorus and there's three people singing, they probably won't be driving banjo all the way through it if the banjo player is doing the baritone like J.D. Crow was there.
Yeah.
And the mandolin player was doing the tenor, so all he'd be doing is vamping at the most if he was singing, you see. So, but if the... If the tenor was done by the bass player, the mandolin could be doing backup. All depends on the structure of the band. This concept of bluegrass music is the players are the singers as well, changes the structure of the band, and that's really quite hard to capture. And I know I've always liked recording the music live, but it doesn't always work to get the best sound. But when you're overdubbing, you have to remember that, you know, well, we're not going to have guitar backup going while the guitarist is singing, you know. And yet, to a listener, it probably doesn't matter. But to me, it mattered. Anyway, so that was Flat and Scruggs. Now, back in the day, Flat and Scruggs were the first bluegrass band that I ever heard. And it was a live concert at Carnegie Hall. And they had two microphones, as you do, two condenser microphones. And all the harmony was done around one microphone. You know, they all stood, you know, 2 feet away from the mics and sang. And the other one was for fiddle and banjo solos and things like that. And I'm going to play a track off that now to show you that this is the sound that typified bluegrass music.
Yeah.
And yet it's a very similar sound because the condenser mics pick up everything. But, of course, you're probably not having monitors powering back at you, you know, that you had to have to override the volume of the monitor so you can, you know, get your music out. So it's all quite different. But this is Flatt & Scruggs at Carnegie Hall. This is a classic track. And when we bought the album and put it on, this was the first thing that we heard.
I stand on the corner with the low-down blues, a great big hole in the bottom of my shoe.
Let me be your sorry dog. Let me be your sorry dog, or I won't be your man at all. Let me be your sorry dog.
Now look here, Sal, I know you run down stocking and a woe out you.
Let me be your solid dog. Let me be your solid dog, or I won't be your man at all. Let me be your solid dog.
I would set no log, finger on trigger, now the hold.
Let me be your solid dog. Let me be your solid dog, or I won't be your man at all. Let me be your solid dog.
Pulled the trigger and the gun said go. Shot fell over in Mexico.
Let me be your solid dog. Let me be your solid dog, or I won't be your man at all. Let me be your solid dog.
They get an amazing
awesome
sound.
For live. Yeah, it's just, so good.
You see pictures of them on stage, and they just had two microphones.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they probably would have put a mic on the bass or something like that. But he was one of the singers, and they move in and out. And, you know, this, and it's a totally different thing. So I guess your challenge as an engineer is to capture a sound that someone's got in their head, you know. And if it's someone like you and you're a guitarist when you sing, you're probably listening for a pretty driving guitar behind your voice because that's how you imagine your sound.
Yeah.
I'm saying that very carefully. But
I know what you mean. Yeah.
But that's how you imagine your sound with so it's going to be a guitar-driven sound. And Dan Tominski was a bit like that. But there's others who would they're just playing guitar just to pitch to, really, and just to do something while they're singing, and they let the others push the band along, you know. And there's so many different approaches. Do you get the music down for someone? Like I did, I came in and recorded my track, and it, you know, rolled along, was a sort of mid-tempo-y, bluegrassy, country sort of sound. Did that. Then do you experiment with mixes? Do you say it needs more punch in the guitar, or needs less guitar, or needs more bass? Or
yeah, definitely. And every instrument I record, you sort of you might remix another because something will sit differently when there's something new in there. So along the way, you're always remixing every instrument, I find. You can't just mix the drums at the start and be like, yep, that'll do for the rest of the song.
Right.
So everything you add, because it's adding a new element and new frequencies, they'll behave differently with everything else. So you're constantly remixing the song as a whole and always trying to mix with everything on. That's what I try to do.
Oh, right.
Because if you mix too much in solo, what we call, and you just solo the one instrument, it's not how it's going to sound, obviously, when it's everyone's in. So I try to mix with everything in as much as I can.
What do you do about reverbs? Do you put reverb on each instrument as you're recording it, or do you wait until you've got a complete sound before you do reverbs and things?
No, I do reverbs as I go with each instrument, but like I said before, that could change too. So I usually have a reverb channel for certain instrument groups. Like I'll have an acoustic reverb channel,
yes,
where it's just like a, I might have a plate reverb or a room reverb for certain reverb for the guitars, and they'll all send to that same reverb. Yeah. So they all sound like they're in the same space.
Yeah.
And then vocals will usually have a different type of reverb, like a plate.
Yeah, reverbs were handled very badly in the 1950s for bluegrass bands, particularly in the many recordings sounded like they were recorded in an outside toilet or something like that, you know, and just with all hard surfaces and just sounded dreadful, you know. That's why the bluegrass album band was great, because all these old recordings that we'd listen to that were of varying standards of recording were not up to what our ears were used to. So they just basically put everything into something that was very listenable.
Yeah. And back in the day, it was all real reverbs too. When you, like you mentioned, your friend had, he bought the reverb, the real reverb.
Yeah.
And now it's all digital. But back then it was sort of like, once you've printed that on there, it's, you know, your reverb's there. You can't go back and tweak it along the way.
Oh, is that right?
Because back then you'd send your track through a reverb tank or a reverb plate, a real one, and once you've recorded that, that's there. You can't go back and tweak one parameter of the reverb.
Yeah.
Well, nowadays with plugins, you know, you go in and just make the room a little bigger, or a little smaller. Or
you're playing. Now, I'm getting on in years and have deafness and sore fingers and things like that. Mm. So when I go into a session like you wanted yesterday, I'm thinking, God, I hope I can play this, you know, and by the time we'd run through the tune 10 times, I'd sort of got the hang of it and could do it. What do you do when a musician isn't quite coming up to what you want for the track?
I really haven't had that yet. I like to think that I know the person's abilities once I get them in. I know they can do the spot. And, you know, even if someone comes in and I've had new people come in and they think, oh, you know, I don't think I can do this. Or I had a singer once that said, oh, I don't think I can hit these highs. We can might have to cancel this.
Yes.
I said, no, come in. I know what you can do and I know I can get it out of you.
Okay.
And we did. We did.
Right.
In the studio. And so, yeah, I think it's just, and that's part of my job as well as a producer, is also just getting the best out of an artist and out of a musician. But yeah, I haven't really had that problem with
a
musician coming in and not be able to do the job.
Yeah. You always wonder. I mean, I've done quite a few sessions, but not a huge number. I've done quite a few sessions, often as overdubbing, and if I was playing with the band, I wouldn't have any concerns.
Oh, right.
But when I'm overdubbing, you do. Even though you've got the sound in your headphones and the sound of your banjo and everything's there, it just feels different.
Yeah.
But I know that if I was recording it live with the band, I'd be good. I'd be in time and mostly get the chord changes and only bluff, make a mess every now and then, you know, like yesterday.
Yeah. I also think when you're overdubbing and you're the only instrument in there and you're the loudest, and I think you tend to think that everything has to be exactly perfect, when in reality, when you're in a mix like that, we're not robots. we're humans, and it sounds good like that.
Yes.
You know, and those little things that make it human make it sound good compared to if you brought in a fake, you know, programmed banjo roll track or something, and it just sounds robotic. And
yes, it does.
Yeah.
I remember in one session I was doing with Dave Rhodes, the bluegrass band was recording, and Jeremy, my oldest son, was producing for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to do some Dobro overdubs.
Okay.
Like that. Mm-hmm. And I got in there and I was just blundering around, you know. I just couldn't quite get my head into it. And we're sitting there and they said, right, let's just do it bit by bit. And we put them there and I said, do you like this? And they said, yeah, that wasn't bad. Do that again. Yeah, right. Try it up higher. Try it lower, you know. And bit by bit, we put down some stuff. They were very understanding and wheedled out of me something that sounded tolerable, you know. Yep. Yeah, so that was good fun working with them.
Awesome.
Yeah. Another thing that I wanted to ask is when you're working on a track, do you try and do it as quickly as possible or do you sort of get it down and then let it sit for a while and then come back to it anew to see if there's anything you need?
I definitely don't try to rush tracks. And I'm at the way I sort of run things at the moment, I'm working on a few things at a time, which there's a fine line of working on too much. But it's good having a bunch of things because then you can step away and work on something different. Because sometimes if you work on the same thing for too long, you get this sort of fatigue on it. And also, you could go the other way. If you spend too long on a track, things that should be fixed end up sounding normal to you. So you work on it, you hear something so many times, you think it's how it is.
Wow.
And then I show other people and they go, oh, this thing pokes out at me. And then I go, oh, it does too. I just got so used to that thing, which is usually a mistake or something that needs to be fixed. And you get used to it. So I think it is good to step away but also not spend too long on a song.
When we got near the final mix, we often asked the recording engineer to play it back through little speakers we were listening on in those days a transistor radio or just, you know, a fairly crappy sort of record player or something like that instead of the beautiful stereo stuff in the studio, just so we could hear it at low volume and what it sounded like and if it came out. And suddenly you hear it at low volume and you think there's no bass anymore, you know. Or all we can hear is the bass. You know, what happened to the other things? You know,
Well, that's the last thing I do with a song before I sign it off as done is I pull out my phone and listen to it on my phone speakers. Yeah. Because sad reality is a lot of people are going to be hearing your song when you release it. They're going to just listen on their phone. They're not going to go, oh, I better go plug this into my hi-fi stereo.
Yeah.
So it's sad, but a lot of people are going to just be scrolling and go, here's a song.
Isn't it?
So you've got to actually make sure it sounds good everywhere. And that's been done for years. And a lot of studios have little lo-fi speakers set up just for that, so they can have a listen to it.
Yes.
Lo-fi, and also listen to it in mono, see how it sounds good down the middle.
Yes.
And they do all those checks. I do the car check is a big one. It's got to sound good in the car stereo.
Oh, is that right?
So I listen to it on as many things, and I tell my clients to do the same. Listen to it on headphones, listen to it in your car, because things will pop, things with different speakers with different frequency responses will poke different things out. And,
Oh, fantastic. Now, what I want to do is play a track from a band called Seldom Seen. Yeah. And some of the music, these guys formed in Washington, D.C. in the early 1970s, and some of the musicians were from other bands who had been recording bands and experienced. The lead singer, a mandolin player, had been a prime mover in bluegrass music in Washington and around that area for many, many years. And one of the lead vocalists was new to recording, you know, and he was just a nice singer. He was a doctor and he just played guitar and had a beautiful voice, and they were a real mixture. But their approach to the music suddenly appeared to be different from all the other bands.
Oh, yeah.
And they had a lot of space in their music. And I'm going to play a track. It's time for a gospel song. I always have a gospel song on Back Porch Bluegrass. And so I'm going to play from Act One, first album of the Seldom Seen, a tune called Will There Be Any Stars in My Crown? And see what you think of this.
Will there be any stars in my crown? When at evening the sun goeth
I shall reach when life's sun goeth down. When through wonderful grace by my Savior I stand, will there be any stars in my crown?
Will there be any stars in my crown? When at evening the sun goeth down, will I wake with the blessed in God's mansions of rest? Will there be any stars in my
strength of the Lord, let me labor and pray. Let me watch as a winner of souls, that bright stars may be mine on that glorious day, when His praise like the sea billows roll.
Will there be any stars in my crown? When at evening the sun goeth down, when I wake with the blessed in God's mansions of rest, will there be any stars in my crown?
Would you have liked to have recorded that?
Yeah. Yeah, the vocals are beautiful. There's when he hits that high note.
Oh, John Duffy was absolutely amazing. He's sort of extreme in lots of ways, and he's noted as being extreme. But he was a very, very good singer and capable of absolute control and tone and emotion and the whole bit, you know. And interesting, the bass player was a real walker. And it fitted in. And the dobro, that was Mike Aldridge, and very spacey. And you could just about hear the different reverbs on things, couldn't you?
You could. Yeah. It's very a wide stereo field.
Oh, yes, yeah, very much. I mean, every track on the album is a bit like that. And it's just really, really quite special. Something I was going to ask you. Oh, what I'm going to do is play to you, we've got about 10 minutes left, a track which is probably classic mid-50s bluegrass music, and this is sort of what it grew into. This is after the music's only been around about 10 years, right? And it had the format was almost standard. And this was an album we got, and it was the first album that I ever got that actually had what you'd call a standard format of bluegrass music in it. And it's a guy called Earl Taylor, and his, the album's incorrectly labeled because the bluegrass musicians are a difficult bunch of people. And evidently the mandolin player and the tenor singer and the guitarist, they sang, were great together, but they frequently argued and the band broke up often, but then they'd get back together again and it changed. So the recording company changed the name of the band on them. It's really Earl Taylor, Jim McCall and the Stony Mountain Boys. And it's absolute classic bluegrass music, and it's one of the songs that every jam session knows, called Cabin Home on the Hill. And this has got just about what I'd call standard bluegrass everything in it. And it's a really interesting mix, and I think you'll enjoy it. I'll just get myself set up over here. What are we? Yeah, we're all set to go.
Tonight I'm alone without you, my dear. It seems there's a longing for you still. Now all I have to do now is sit alone and cry in our little cabin home on the hill. Oh, someone has taken you from me and left me here all alone. Just listen to the rain beat on my window pane in our little cabin home on the hill. Tonight as you are, for in my heart there's a longing for you still. Now I'll just keep you there so I won't be alone in our little cabin home on the hill. Oh, someone have taken you from me and left me here all alone. Just listen to the rain beat on my window pane in our on the hill. Now when you have come to the end of the way and find there's no more happiness for you, just let your thoughts turn back once more, if you will, to our little cabin home on the hill. Oh, someone have taken you from me and left me here all alone. Just listen to the rain beat on my window pane in our little cabin home on the hill.
Absolutely, sort of, I suppose you'd say bog standard bluegrass.
Yeah. Style.
They had a band sound. They recorded 12 tracks in a four-hour session.
Oh.
They just went into the studio, laid down the tracks and went home, you know, and that was it. And they just mixed everything the way it played. Once again, the banjo player wasn't a singer, so he played right through everything, you know, all that.
Yeah, wow.
Good. Anyway, lots of things going on. Have you got a lot of work lined up?
Yeah, fair bit. Yeah.
what sort of thing? All once again, just singles and.
Yeah. I'm working on two albums. One's almost finished from a local duo called Rowdy's Rose from Te Awamutu.
Yes.
Another album I just started with someone, and then just a whole bunch of singles.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you have time for your own music amongst all this?
A little bit. I released a song a couple of months ago.
That's true, yeah.
I have a few songs in the barrel that I've written, but I just sort of try to work on them when I have any gaps, which is not a lot at the moment.
No.
But my main focus is the producing thing. I'm happy to chuck in my own song every now and again, but I'm focusing on the studio at the moment. So.
Right. How many people can you get into your studio at a time? Would you record a duo? I mean, it's a pretty small room. It's like this studio at Free FM. You'd record, you know, two guitar, two voice duo at the same time.
Yeah, I would, and I've done that with a duo. But I usually there's still a lot of overdubbing to be done. Yes. So I use the duo. The duo comes in and they would do their scratch tracks. We call them tracks that when they're there as a guide and they're going to be deleted later on once they're. The real things are put on.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's mainly overdubbing at this stage.
Yes, okay. Yeah. What's your next piece of equipment?
Oh, the list is long.
Oh, is it really?
And it's about deciding which one is needed the most. The wish list is long. I really would like a new. I really would like a ribbon mic. There's a certain they're called the Royer R121. It's a famous ribbon mic. It's great for electric guitar amps. Okay. Paired with a Shure SM57. It's like the sort of golden combo. So that's on the wish list.
You put the two mics there and then merge the sounds.
Yeah, so you put them so they're picking up the same picking up the sound at the exact same time. They've got to be in the right spot, otherwise you get some weird phasing issues.
Yes,
but yeah, you blend them together. One has a more direct attack sound because it's a dynamic microphone, and one is condensed, a ribbon, so it has more of a sort of a rounded low end sound, and they mix together and you get
So what do you use on the electric guitar amp now?
I use the 57 still.
Isn't that amazing?
And I also use it in conjunction with another ribbon mic. It's not the same ribbon mic, but it's another one here.
Okay, but those sort of things come after you've paid the rates and the repair bill on the car. And,
that's the one. That's the one.
Yeah. Yes, your wife might have to get three jobs instead of just two jobs to support your recording industry.
Yeah. Luckily, I also teach full time. That's my main job, and
Teach guitar, mostly?
I teach guitar, a little bit of bass, ukulele, and I take a couple of school rock bands as well.
Oh, yes, so. Like Sam did.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, very good. Well, we're just about at the end of the show. Thanks very much for coming in, Dan. I've really enjoyed talking to you. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'm going to play you a track that you might like called The Huckleberry Hornpipe from Dan Carey.
Awesome.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.